Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Brett Napier on CBS Sports Radio.
It is so awesome to be right here in the jungle. We're coming to you live from the Quicken Loan Studios. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. And I've been doing the show for about 10 years, but it's the first time I'm in Alvin's ballpark. Yes, and Adam, it's great to see you. It is so awesome to be down here in SoCal. I talked to Alvin, gosh, so many times over the years, and then last year he was at a Kings-Clippers game. I guess he was really bored that day. I don't know what he was doing at the Staples Center. And he came up to me and he goes, "Hey, Grant, Alvin DeLauro." And I go, "Hey, Alvin, what's going on, buddy?" And we took a couple pictures and we talked for a little while. It is so awesome to be here down in SoCal. And I'm really excited because we have a great show for you today. Coming up at the conclusion of hour number one, we'll talk with Joe Buck from Fox Sports. The U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills is coming up round one on Thursday. You'll see it on Fox Sports 1 and Fox Sports. Then in hour number two, we're going to talk some baseball with John Smoltz, of course, from the MLB Network and also of Fox. Hey, Cleveland, how about those Brownies? Yeah, we've got Hugh Jackson, the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. He's coming on in hour number three. We'll see if he's dried off yet from his dip in Lake Erie. And then we saw a triple crown over the weekend. Jungle favorite Eddie Olczyk. We're going to put a wrap on the NHL season. We'll also talk with Eddie O. There's some controversy that's come out from the Belmont on Saturday. So we'll talk with Eddie Olczyk. That is coming up in hour number three. All right, NBA wrap. First of all, breaking news. Dwayne Casey, who was fired as the head coach of the Toronto Raptors, is going to be the new head coach of the Detroit Pistons. A five-year deal for Dwayne Casey, and good for him. The guy's a quality coach. So many years as an assistant under George Karl up in Seattle. Then he got a quick short stop in Minnesota. I thought he did a marvelous job in Toronto. He just couldn't beat LeBron. Hey, join the crowd, and now he goes to Detroit. So we'll talk a little bit about that, but I want to put a wrap on what we just watched in the NBA season. Now, it's the first show since we saw the Golden State Warriors sweep the Cleveland Cavaliers. And after the game, game four, Sam Amick of USA Today was the first guy to put out there that LeBron James had a significant hand injury. Now, if you read Sam Amick's account in USA Today, the notion is that had that news not gotten out, that LeBron would not have walked into the post-game press conference with the soft cast on his hand. Listen, game one was a travesty. I've been doing the NBA for 30 years. I love the NBA, obviously. And I have the utmost respect for the NBA officials. Game one was bad. I mean, listen, I don't root for the Cavaliers or the Warriors. I don't care. Game one was bad. Game one was bad enough that it cost the Cavaliers the game, in my opinion. Here's what I don't understand with LeBron James and the hand. We saw the video in between fourth quarter and overtime. He's sitting with his arms like this. You've got J.R. Smith. You've got George Hill. We've seen it. We've dissected it. We don't need to go into that. Overtime starts, it's all Golden State, right? With, 2 minutes left, 90 seconds left in overtime, that game was over. So LeBron James playing, knowing that the game is over for a few minutes of real time, then walks down the corridor. And by the way, the walk from Oracle Arena to the locker room, it's a pretty good walk. I wouldn't call it the longest in the NBA. It's a long walk. It's enough, I would think, to decompress going through the tunnel. Then you make a right-hand turn, and it's probably another 30 or 40 paces before you're in the visitor's locker room. And then he goes in and punches the blackboard. And he comes out in the press conference and says he basically played with a broken hand. Well, your hand's either broken or it's not broken. I'm not disputing the effect on LeBron James' hand. I don't know. He's the only one that knows. Raise your hand if you thought that the Cleveland Cavaliers were going to win the NBA Finals this year. Here's what I don't understand. And it's been going on all weekend. And here we are on Monday morning on the West Coast, Monday afternoon on the East Coast. And everyone's still talking about LeBron is not Michael Jordan. You know, Who's going to prove this debate? Is there an arbiter that's going to come out of the woods somewhere and say, this is the greatest player of all time? Is it Bill Russell? Is it Wilt Chamberlain? It's subjective. We're not going to ever prove who's the greatest player of all time. Here's what I don't understand. And I was blessed to call LeBron James' first ever NBA game, and I'll share you this little story. LeBron James, 18 years of age, walks in the Arco Arena, and I do an afternoon show in Sacramento with Doug Christie, the former NBA player. And Doug was guarding Kobe Bryant that night. And Doug was talking about the first time that LeBron tried to post him up. Doug realized that this was not just a typical 18-year-old, that this was a real strong guy that he was going to have a difficult time dealing with even at age 18. Jerry Reynolds, my longtime television analyst who just retired at the end of this season, in the middle of the game, okay, now think about this. LeBron James' first ever game, 18 years of age. We go to a commercial break. We come back. It's either the second or third quarter. That part I don't remember. And Jerry says to me, he goes, I'm telling you right now, if this guy stays healthy, we may very well be talking about the greatest player of all time made his debut in Sacramento at Arco Arena. Now, here's the problem I have. I do not understand the constant criticism by some about LeBron James. You don't want to call him Michael Jordan? Go ahead. Don't call him Michael Jordan. You want to say that Bill Russell or Wilt Chamberlain or somebody else is the greatest player of all time? Go right ahead. If you're going to have a conversation about the greatest player in the history of the NBA and you don't include LeBron James, then just stop the conversation. I'm out. Just stop it. And you should stop the conversation. Because you cannot have a conversation about the greatest player in the history of basketball if you don't include LeBron James. And here's the other thing. LeBron James is 33, right? Did LeBron James look to you like he was slowing down this year? Played in every game? He was the best player in the postseason, period. He was the very best player in the NBA. Now, I know a lot of people are getting on him for his Game 4 performance. That's fair. It looked like he checked out. The whole Cavaliers team looked like they checked out in that Game 4 blowout to Golden State. I'm sure they knew they had no chance of winning, especially after Game 1. And then the hand, I don't know if that makes a difference. Anybody out there thinks that Cleveland's going to win that series if LeBron James doesn't injure his hand? Of course not. They're not going to win that series. Why are so many people down on LeBron James? I don't get it. It makes no sense to me. So we'll talk about that. We're going to have an open segment coming up before we have our first guest with John Smoltz. And by the way, clones, if you want to call the show, it's 800-636-8686. But I also want to talk about something else that we saw in the NBA playoffs. And let's just call it the way it is. It wasn't a great postseason for the NBA. Yeah, you had a Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals. You had a Game 7 in the Western Conference Final. How many bad games did we watch this year in the NBA playoffs? How bad was it to see the Houston Rockets and the Golden State Warriors, both excellent three-point shooting teams, not being able to put the ball in the ocean? The game has changed. Call it analytics. Call it whatever you want. I have a rule change for you I want you to think about. Because the NBA has always been in the forefront of making rule changes to improve their game. It's the one thing I have seen in my 30 years of announcing NBA basketball. When there's a problem, the NBA figures out a way to fix it. They're always trying to improve their game. You know, remember when you used to be able to hand check and grab and, you know, you could pull guys' jerseys. You know, you talk about the bad boy era, but before that, I mean, if you go watch highlights of the Knicks and the Lakers play in the 69-70 NBA Finals, just watch Jerry West and Walt Frazier defend each other. They're like getting mugged up and down the court. The NBA is not afraid of making changes. How about this? I think the game has gone too far to the perimeter. Three-point shooting now is what we see every single night. And when you see a team like the Houston Rockets go, what was it, 7-for-44? That's awful. How many games did we watch this year in the NBA postseason where we were like, man, what a terrible game? Now, there were some good games, but there were a lot of bad games in the postseason. How about this rule change? Again, I go back to Jerry Reynolds, former NBA coach, former NBA general manager. He has been my television analyst for 20-plus years. I like what Jerry has to say about this. How about taking the three-point line, and when the line turns straight, when the arc turns into a straight line, get rid of it. Eliminate the corner three. So you would have the three-point arc, and when the arc stops and becomes a straight line to the baseline, you eliminate that portion of the three-point shot. Is basketball really meant to be a three-on-one and a player passes up a dunk or a layup to kick it out into the corner for an NBA player, a wide-open three? It's not that far from the corner. It's an easy shot for the NBA. What would happen if we eliminated that part of the three-point line? Would that make for a better game? I think it would. I don't know how much longer we're going to sit here and just say, oh, it's great that we're seeing teams chuck three-pointers all game. It's part of the game. It should be part of the game. It's become too much a part of the game. And then you have your super teams. Where's LeBron going to go? Is Kevin Durant going to stay in Oakland? He said he is. Is that good for the NBA? You can go back on it both ways. I'm going to come back. I'm going to talk a little bit about whether or not super teams are good for the NBA. We're going to touch on what we saw at Belmont on Saturday with Justify. A little bit of controversy coming out of that race. We're going to talk with Eddie Olczyk in the third hour about that. But, Clones, we have an open segment coming up if you want to get on. 800-636-8686. Grant Napier in the jungle. Great to be here on CBS Sports Radio. Hey, 2018 is flying right by, and we all want to continue to elevate our game to that next level and make this the best ever. Well, if you're a contractor, builder, or remodeler, listen up, because elevating your game the rest of the year just got a whole lot easier thanks to my friends at Lumber Liquidators and their new LL Pro Plus program. LL Pro Plus is Lumber Liquidators' new pro services team that you can call for all of your professional flooring needs. LL Pro Plus will help you absolutely crush it this year with professional pricing and dedicated support to get you what you need when you need it, so you can get your projects completed on schedule. LL Pro Plus gives you the ultimate value and quality. And with LL Pro Plus, no job is too large or too small. So put the flooring experts on your team today. Visit your local Lumber Liquidator store or go to LumberLiquidators.com. That's LumberLiquidators.com. Let's continue to make 2018 the best year ever with Lumber Liquidators.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
If you're ready to reduce the gray in your hair, go with the smartest product available. Experience Control GX from Just for Men, the first shampoo with a brain. What makes it so smart? It reduces gray the same way it grows in, gradually. The more you shampoo with Control GX, the less gray you have. Just use it until you like what you see. How smart is that? Smart enough to be voted Men's Hair Care Product of the Year. Gradually reduce gray with the first shampoo with a brain. Find Control GX in the shave aisle. 800-636-8686. All right, a couple of rule changes in the NBA that I went over. I got another rule change for you. How about Darren Revell, the business reporter of ESPN? He reported, if you can believe this, that the Golden State Warriors, the champagne that was in their locker room, cost over $400,000. Think about that for a minute. You're telling me that over $400,000 was spent on a liquid that you're going to spray over all the wall and all over each other? You're going to spend $400,000 plus on the champagne? Do we really need to have that kind of champagne to toast a championship team? That's unbelievable to me. All right, before we take some phone calls at 800-636-8686. All right, what about super teams? Are they good for the NBA? Well, I'm going to give you the pro side of it. The NBA's making more money than they ever have. TV ratings are great. They break attendance records all the time. So I would say, yeah, it's great for the NBA. It's not hurting the game. Is it good for a sport when at the beginning of the season, realistically, two, three, at the most four teams can win a championship? Now, I know the NBA may differ with that, but we knew before the season began, before we even threw one ball up, that Golden State and Houston would be playing for the Western Conference Finals, right? And in the East, we knew that you had to go through Cleveland, and it looked like Boston was there, and then they weren't. And Toronto took a step back. Here's my solution for fixing all of this. And I'm not fixing super teams, but I'm fixing what I think could be more entertainment in the NBA Finals. We've heard talk about seeding the teams 1 through 16 for the NBA playoffs. Can't do that. You can't have a team in the West Coast opening up round one, let's say in Miami or, you know, wherever. You can't. Too much travel. I don't care about the charter planes and everything. Trust me. I travel with these teams. The planes are nice. You can't do anything about the time change. It wears on you. So you can't do that. How about this? How about when you get to the Eastern Conference Finals and the Western Conference Finals, you reseed the teams there. So you have four teams left. The best team plays the fourth best team. Second best team plays the third best team. So that would have given us this year Golden State and Houston in the NBA Finals. Now, I know Chris Paul was hurt, but think about if Chris Paul had not been injured. Think about how entertaining that series would be. I'll tell you this. There would be a game tonight. The season would not be over. Think about that for a minute. Think about reseeding the teams after you get down to the Final Four. That, to me, pretty much guarantees you that you're going to get the two very best teams playing for the NBA championship. All right, let's get to some phone calls. Why don't we start with Eric in Pensacola, Florida. Hey, Eric, welcome to the Jim Rome Show.
Hey, Jim. I love your show. I'm a first-time caller. Never have called before, but I just want to ask you a couple quick questions. Had JR hit that shot with that 4.7 seconds left in the game and made that shot, I even got fouled and went to the free throw and made one or two fouls. You think that, and Cleveland would have won that game. Do you think that we could have had a better series? Their confidence would have been built up enough to even go back to Cleveland and win one or two in Cleveland and maybe even steal another game. Not saying that they would have won series, but made it a better series.
Eric, thanks for the call. Yeah, of course it would have been a better series. I think it would have changed everything. I don't see any way in the world Cleveland could have won this series, because if you cancel out the, you know, the two best players on the floor, you take Kevin Durant, LeBron James. Let's put them over here on the side for a minute. All right, you have Steph Curry. Who matches up with Cleveland? Nobody. Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. I can go on and on. Barring injury, Golden State would still win that series, and they probably win in it at five. Could Cleveland go home and win a game? Yeah, it would have certainly changed things, but I don't see it. Thanks for the call. All right, let's get to Hammett, California, and Ruben. Ruben, thanks for calling the Jim Rome Show. You're in the jungle. What can we do for you?
I'm just calling in because I'm just keep hearing LeBron James, the greatest, and Michael Jordan. Did everybody forget about Kobe Bryant?
No, no one's forgetting about Kobe Bryant. I can't put Kobe Bryant ahead of Michael Jordan. I think Kobe Bryant should be in the conversation.
I mean, maybe not ahead of Michael Jordan, but LeBron James?
You know what? Probably not, in my opinion, but it's subjective. I mean, if you're going to talk about great players of all time, Kobe Bryant should be in the mix. Again, I work with a guy that guarded all three. I work with Doug Christie in Sacramento on my radio show, and Doug was one of the very best defensive players in the NBA. And he thinks, again, he guarded all three, and he said Michael Jordan's the greatest player that he's ever guarded. He said he's the best player that he's ever been on the floor with or against. That's just one man's opinion, but his opinion is a little bit different than mine or yours because he actually played against all three. But listen, could Kobe Bryant in an argument, could you put him ahead of LeBron? Maybe you could. Here's the difference. LeBron James could be an all-star at all five positions on the floor. He could play center. He could play power forward. Kobe Bryant couldn't play power forward or center. And Ruben, thanks for the call. But that's really the difference. All right, Gary in Michigan. You're on with Grant Napier. Welcome to the Jim Rome Show.
How's it going, Grant?
What's up?
All right. I'm thinking in game one, if all the calls the ref made, the series would have went on a little bit longer. I'm thinking that that call on Tristan Thompson the last 2 seconds made a difference in their momentum and their spirit. I think the poking LeBron eye that wasn't really called would have made a difference. I think that the refs played for Golden State more than they helped the Cavaliers any throughout the whole playoffs.
You know, Gary, obviously the series would have gone longer, and thanks for the call, because they would have gone at least five games. But there's no way. I don't see any way that the Golden State Warriors don't end up winning this series, even if Cavaliers win game one. Sure, it would have been more exciting. Sure, it would have been more entertaining. There would be a game tonight. We know that for sure. But I can't see them winning. All right, let's get to Colt in Louisiana. What's up, Colt?
What's going on, man? I appreciate you taking my phone call.
Thank you.
You're talking about all these rule changes, man. They really need to do something about the three-point shooting. And what I mean is, if you get the defender off his feet and then the shooter initiates contact, man, that shouldn't be a foul.
I agree with you that that needs to be changed. The offensive player moving in towards the defensive player, if the defensive player is going up vertically or is not in the neighborhood, I agree with you. I don't like that call either. I think that they need to change it a little bit. Something else I think they need to do, Colt, and they're going to experiment with this summer, is have one challenge or two challenges per game for coaches to use. Now, I know it's going to slow up the game a little bit, but that would prevent what we saw in game one of the NBA Finals down the stretch. There were there were a few bad calls that went against Cleveland that clearly changed the outcome of that game. And had Ty Lue had a challenge and could have used it there, maybe we're having a game five tonight. Actually, we are having a game five tonight.
I mean, I like that idea. It's like a little page out of the NFL book.
Say that again, Colt.
I said I like the idea of the challenge. You take a little bit of the NFL, put it in there, you get to challenge the call.
Yeah, I'm with you. Thanks for the call. I mean, why not? You got to try something else. You got to have a mechanism to prevent what happened in game one. Jeremy, calling from Texas. You're on the Jim Rome Show. Welcome to the jungle, Jeremy. What's going on?
Hey, man. I'm not all hip to the rules and all that good stuff. I'm a sports fan. I like basketball. Grew up as a Mavs fan, one of my closest teams here to me. Yep. I'm literally between Dallas and Oklahoma City, so kind of a Thunder fan every now and then, depending on who they're playing. But my thing about the whole $400,000 worth of champagne, you wonder why somebody can't afford to drive 300 miles and then afford to buy tickets at some of your games when you're spending that kind of money on this stuff. Your average guy is not going to be able to afford to make the games to begin with, and to hear that extravagance is kind of heartbreaking, you know?
It's overdone. There's no reason. And again, Darren Revelle is an unbelievably respected reporter. I can't say that his information is incorrect. I'm going by what he reported via Twitter. And again, he's a business reporter with ESPN. But there is an extreme, and then there's ridiculous. And that is absolutely ridiculous. If that's true, there's a cost of over $400,000 on champagne that is being sprayed all over everyone and on the walls, and it's absurd. It's stupidity. Now, I understand where you're coming from, Jeremy, but that's not why the ticket prices are what they are in the NBA. And if you're talking, and listen, I'm telling you this, Jeremy, you know this as well as I do. All right, you maybe not Oklahoma City, but the Mavs, you can get affordable tickets to go to the Mavs. Oklahoma City may be more difficult. There's most teams, with the exception of maybe three or four, they all have ticket plans. They have certain promotional nights. Maybe you're not sitting three rows from the court, but you can still find, relatively speaking, affordable tickets for a lot of NBA games. Hey, don't forget, coming up when we return, we are going to have Joe Buck. All right, we're going to talk with Joe. Fox Sports, Fox Sports 1, the U.S. Open is coming up round one Thursday at Mammoth Shinnecock Hills. We'll talk to Joe about that and a lot more when we come back. But right now it is time for our...
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Brett Napier on CBS Sports Radio.
Time to ask the pros, where you, the clones, get to ask me a question. Brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Go to CBSSportsRadio.com/AskThePros and submit your question. Be listening later in the show when I might answer your question. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Well, Shinnecock Hills, round one Thursday. Fox Sports 1 and Fox will have all of the coverage throughout the weekend. And joining us is a guy that I would have to say is a little busy. He is going to be the host of the U.S. Open coverage. Of course, Fox Football. You'll see him throughout the World Series. He's going to be the host of Thursday Night Football. And, oh, yeah, by the way, Joe Buck just had twins, and yet he still has time to come into the jungle. Joe, congratulations. Thanks for making the time, man. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Grant? It's been a while since we've talked.
Yes, it has been a while. You getting any sleep, Joe?
Well, I am. I think that's basically why I'm doing the U.S. Open, so that I can leave St. Louis, come to the Hamptons, and actually get sleep with these twins. So, yeah, I'm going to be the weird old dad. I'm 49. I've got a 22-year-old daughter, an almost 19-year-old daughter and twins that are 0 years old. So I'll be drooling on myself at their eighth-grade graduation.
Oh, my gosh. That's great. Joe Buck joining us here on the Jim Rome Show. Shinnecock Hills, obviously, with Tiger in the mix, and they have lengthened this course. I mean, this is a big ballpark that we're all going to see beginning on Thursday on Fox Sports 1 and Fox.
Yeah, that's literally the way Tiger Woods described it. It is. It's a bigger ballpark than it was when everybody was here back in 2004. And it's also got a different look. The greens are bigger than they were. They restored the greens to more of their original size. And this course is obviously very old. It goes back to 1896. So there's been a bunch of redos. But really, the design from William Flynn back in the early 50s still stands today. And they took the course back to that look. And not only are the greens bigger, but the fairways are bigger. And in some spots, a lot bigger than they were in 2004. And I think the USGA, when they went through what they did at Erin Hills and Brooks Koepka shot 16 under and kind of took off with it and a lot of great scoring, they came in about a year ago and started narrowing some of the fairways and trying to make it a little more difficult or put more of a premium on driving accuracy. That said, they can make these greens whatever they want. They lost them in 04. I think the USGA was embarrassed about that. I don't believe that that's even on the board in 2018. But with these greens and the way they're kind of hoisted up in the air, this place is no picnic once they get those things running fast.
Well, I mean, obviously it's a U.S. Open, so you have the best golfers in the world. We saw Dustin Johnson get the win yesterday. We know history's against him. You know, no golfers ever won the week before, and then when the U.S. Open, we get all of that. But he's now number one in the world, and it just seems like this course could be really made for him because of the length.
There's no doubt. Coming in hot, and obviously length is a big deal. But, you know, 26 a year ago, everybody talked about how it was soft, was easy, and fairways were wide and what have you. But when you look at the best players in the world, a lot of them missed the cut. And it was kind of by the end of the week, you know, I'm not going to say that they were the lesser known players, but certainly nobody that had really been to win a major before, or at least won a major before. And it was great to win the eighth championship. I think Patrick Knight.
Hey, Joe, I'm going to interrupt for a minute. We're going to reconnect with you. We're breaking up, and so we're going to reconnect with you. So we'll take care of that with Alvin and Adam, and we'll get back right to you. You know, you talk about the golf course, and he's so right. How many of the top players in the world, we see it all the time, miss cuts at these events? It's mind-boggling. And, you know, the fact that Dustin Johnson is the number one player in the world. Hey, would I be surprised if he doesn't make the cut? Yeah, I would be surprised. Would I be shocked? No, I wouldn't be shocked. I think we would all be very surprised. It's golf. And, you know, we don't know what the wind is going to be. That can change. You know, whether you're out early and then the weather, you know, changes, you know, if you're out late. It just, there's a lot of luck in the first 2 days. But the one thing we know about the USGA, they want the best player in the world winning that tournament. In other words, there's no gimmies. There's no like, wow, gee, that was easy. It's the U.S. Open, and the USGA sets up the course to be very difficult. Joe, we're reconnected with you. Thanks for hanging on. You were just talking a little bit about, you know, some of the best players in the world that miss cuts in these majors. And again, that's golf, right? I mean, that we'll probably see it again this weekend.
No, there's no doubt. I mean, I think these majors are becoming really hard to handicap going in. I mean, we all remember a time where it was Tiger against the field is what it felt like.
Yep.
And that's just not the case anymore. I mean, we could talk about Tiger for days and all that he's been through over the last 10 years since he last won a major in 2008. But you start looking at the names that jump out to me, and I think length is big. There's no doubt. Length is a huge part of this. But the guys that have decent length and can also get up and down and can putt are the ones that win these majors. And when they're hot and the putter's working, it's their week. And so I look at a guy, I mean, you can pick the obvious. You could pick Dustin Johnson. You could pick Rory maybe to have kind of a comeback week. But if I'm going to go with somebody that hasn't won one, I think Fowler. I think Ricky Fowler is primed considering what he did at the Masters. Him saying that he got a little taste of what it takes to win a major when he finished a shot behind Patrick Reed. And if I'm going to pick somebody, I'm not saying he's not on the board because he's a top 10 player, but he has yet to really cash in. And I just feel like this is going to be his week.
We're talking with Joe Buck, and of course, he will be the host for the U.S. Open on Fox Sports 1 and Fox. Joe, a week ago today, Jim was interviewing Doc Emrick, and Doc was talking about when he was at graduate school at Bowling Green. He did a big part of graduating for his degree. Was he called up Ernie Harwell and went up and visited Ernie, and he talked about the impact that being with Ernie Harwell had. And I want to ask you, because I always learn stuff every day, even though I've been doing the NBA for 30 years. I had you on my radio show in Sacramento a couple of years ago, and you had just done the Packers game against the Giants, and it was frigid. And I asked you about, you know, the temperature and the cold in the booth. And you said, you know what? My dad told me a long time ago, no one cares about whether you can see. Nobody cares about whether you're warm or you're cold. And that stuck with me because I was like, you know, spot on. But I was just curious, after listening to Doc Emrick talk about Ernie Harwell, what are some of the other valuable lessons that you learned from your dad in terms of broadcasting?
Yeah, I think the first thing, Grant, that I always go to, and it doesn't answer your question because it has nothing to do with broadcasting. It just has to do with how to be a good person. And I saw that firsthand. And it didn't matter if there were cameras on him. There are a lot of people in this world that are phonies, that are fakes, that wait for somebody to be watching, and then all of a sudden they're a nice guy. And he just wasn't that way. In fact, he almost went the other way. And I think he was a little more subdued when the cameras were around or microphones, but when he was on his own, it's why when he died, there were stories that just as a family we sat back and listened to on the radio about, you know, different people he had met along the way and people calling in with these stories that he didn't show up at the dinner table saying, hey, guess what I did today, everybody? He just kind of kept it to himself. So I always answer that question by, he just taught me how to be a nice guy and respect other people. And the other part with broadcasting is, he used to tell a joke toward the end of his life, and he said, you know, someday two people are going to be walking in the streets of downtown St. Louis, and one of them's going to turn to the other and say, hey, did you hear Jack Buck died during the game last night while broadcasting the Cardinals? And the other guy would say, oh, yeah, did the Cardinals win? And right. And the point being, people are tuning in to watch their team. People are tuning in to watch the game or listen to the game, in my dad's case, more than watching. And, you know, you need to treat it that way, that you're lucky to be there. And if you don't show up, somebody else will, and people will still watch or listen because they want to know what's going on in the game. And I think that's the way he treated his career. It's the way he treated other people. That's the way he was ultimately treated by others. And it was just the right way to think about it when you walk into the booth.
You know, I'm glad you said that. I also went to Bowling Green, and the great part in, as you know, Joe, being from St. Louis, in that part of the country, I could listen to Ernie Harwell do the Tigers, and then I could go to KMOX and listen to your dad, and then, of course, there was, you know, your dad and Hank Stram, and I'm a huge hockey fan. I used to absolutely love listening to Dan Kelly do the St. Louis Blues. I think he was as good as any hockey announcer to ever live, but what made all those broadcasters great, and your dad maybe at the top of the list, living for the big moment, and I don't think fans understand the spontaneity that comes with calling a big play. And like your dad, you just seem to have a real knack for that.
Well, thank you. I think if you're not going nuts and screaming and yelling and kind of in some ways hijacking moments when the moments aren't that big, I think once you kind of kick it into gear and the moment is that big, it's more appropriate and people hear it a little more and you can put your stamp on it. But still, you know, my dad's calls were so much better than mine. And one of the big reasons why is he was doing a lot of them on radio. You know, if you're on radio and Kirk Gibson hits the home run in 1988, you have to describe the scene. You have to talk about, you know, Gibson doing the fist pumps and limping around the bases and the people going nuts at Dodger Stadium. If you're doing it on TV, people see it. You know, you don't that. So I treat it for right or wrong, and people criticize me all the time, and you sound like you don't care. It's actually the other way around. I do so much about the moment that I don't want to trample all over it. I would rather state what happened, put a stamp on it, and get out of the way and let the TV audience enjoy it. They don't need me to tell them what they're seeing. And if you have a great director and great sound, you really don't need to do much as the play-by-play guy. So there's an inherent advantage of doing those moments on radio compared to TV.
Hey, before I let you go, I'm going to have John Smoltz on in hour number two, and we have a lot of things to talk
Overrated
about.
Overrated hack.
Yeah, well, you know what? Hey, U.S. Open, Senior Open coming up in a couple of weeks, right? So, I mean, that's going to be exciting to see him do that. But you went.
I'm so happy for him.
Isn't that awesome?
He has made my baseball job a dream. Yeah. And I tell him that all the time. He and I, you know, we get to play golf during the World Series. We're friends. I mean, he just could not be a better guy.
And on top of that, he's the type of guy when I watch baseball, and a matter of fact, it was just watching a game he did on Saturday on Fox, the Yankees-Mets, where honestly, when I watch a game, I learn something from him, and I love that. There aren't a lot of guys that can do that, but he teaches you part of the game and things that you have never thought of before, and I think that's really rare. But John Smoltz has got that down, Joe.
Yeah, he does, because he prepares for the game as if he's going to pitch against each lineup, and that's what makes it fun, and that's what made him a Hall of Famer. I mean, he's a preparer. He's a guy that works hard. He doesn't mail anything in, and so you're right. I sit there and I learn things from him. I love the guy, and he's been as fun as anybody I've ever worked with.
Gibson Knight Football, we know Fox paid a ton of money to get the rights, and, of course, you and Troy will be center stage. Give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for second pick, they wanted Peyton Manning. They didn't get him, and so then they came to us, and they're like, hey, what do you think? And so here we are. It's going to be fun. I can't wait. He and I are pumped to do a primetime game and be a part of that. That's something we've never done. The only time we're on in prime time is every 3 years when we're doing a Super Bowl. So we're excited, and I think it'll have a really cool look. It's a 5-year commitment, which I think is a good thing for both sides, and we're going to treat it like it's the biggest thing going on Fox, and I think during certain times it will be the biggest thing going on Fox, and so we're going to work hard at it.
Joe, great stuff, man. Enjoy Shinnecock Hills. Congratulations on the Twins. Always great to catch up with you, and continued success.
All right, Grant. See you.
All right. That's Joe Buck, Fox Sports 1, and Fox has got the coverage beginning on Thursday at Shinnecock Hills. And I'm going to talk more about this in hour number two, but for those of you that are listening in the area of where I went to college, or you're in the Midwest, or you're away from the huge metropolitan cities, what a pleasure it was to be able to listen to legendary announcers. And before the internet, and like, hey, if you grew up in Southern California and you were listening to Vin Scully and Chick Hearn, you may have had no idea who Marv Albert was, or you may not have had any idea who Ernie Harwell was, of the Detroit Tigers, long, long tenured, legendary, phenomenal, phenomenal announcer. You know, if you're a hockey fan, do you even know who Dan Kelly was? Dan Kelly, honestly, was Doc Emrick on radio. Dan Kelly was absolutely phenomenal. Dan Kelly, I thought, was as good of he was phenomenal. And I used to just love at night flipping around the dial. You know, Herb Score was doing the Cleveland Indians. And, you know, then after that, boy, I'm bored with that game. Oh, here's Ernie Harwell. You know what? Let's see what's going on in St. Louis. And you'd switch over to KMOX. And, boy, now all of a sudden you're listening to the legendary Jack Buck. And you learn so much from listening. And I thought Joe made a great point right there. You know, Marv Albert told me this a long time ago. You're judged more on TV by what you don't say as opposed to what you do say. Whereas radio, you are the eyes and ears of the audience. And the description on radio has to be perfect, and you have to be with the play. Because if you're behind the play, everyone that's listening is going to know it because they're going to hear the crowd go crazy. And so the real art form in radio is don't tell me what happened. Tell me what is happening as it's happening. And I used to love that about some of those great, legendary, iconic broadcasters back in that era. And speaking of legendary, iconic broadcasters, I'm going to talk when we come back. I'm going to give you a couple of thoughts about the Radio Hall of Fame, as Jim Rome is a nominee for the Radio Hall of Fame. And when we return, I'm going to give you my thoughts on why I think Jim is clearly a Hall of Famer in the radio business. That's all coming up next. Grant Napier in the jungle, filling in for Romy right here on CBS Sports Radio.